This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Welcome to In Focus. I'm Paul Gleiser here on KTBB and KRWR, the Team Sports Radio. We have in the studio with us as our guest, Becky Mangum. She's the CEO of Andrews Behavioral Health. Becky, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. Just so that people have some context on our discussion today, give us just the elevator speech. What is Andrews Behavioral Health?
Andrews Behavioral Health is your local mental health authority here in Smith County, and we also serve Henderson, Van Zandt, Wood, and Raines counties. Mm-hmm. So we are the safety net provider for mental health in our area, and we also are charged with helping to educate about the mental health.
So when we talk about mental health, the range of mental health issues that you deal with?
Oh, for mental health, it's very... very large range. We see them severely mentally ill, which is schizophrenia, bipolar, and major depression. But we also serve people with severe anxiety, seasonal or situational depression, just anything. And with children, we serve children with all kinds of behavioral issues, anything that there's lots of diagnosis we can work with children.
What is the scope of the mental health challenge in East Texas? To what degree do we have a problem?
Oh, we have a huge problem here in East Texas. I'm not sure if you're aware, but we lead the stats, not in a good way, in the nation of having the worst mental health care. We're always like 50 to 51 in that. Here in East Texas specifically, many of our counties that we serve are well ahead of the state in terms of numbers of suicides. And that's not a stat I want to be leading in.
Do we have any sense of why that is? Why? What is it about this area that causes this kind of an acute problem?
Well, across the state, there's been studies done, and of course there's rural areas, and we don't have as much access to mental health professionals. Smith County, I think we're pretty well set. We have a fair number of psychiatrists if you look at the actual statistics that they put out there. But if you truly look at access, that's a real challenge. Like, we may have psychiatrists here, but the wait times to get in for various places are sometimes up to 6 months to a year almost.
Well, that's a real problem.
That is a real problem.
That is a very big problem. There has always been, and perhaps there always, regrettably, always will be, a stigma with respect to mental health. Somebody with a broken leg is very straightforward, somebody with heart trouble. Mm-hmm. But there's a stigma about mental health. Talk about the challenge that creates for you.
That creates a big challenge because it delays people getting the help that they need. Nobody has a problem going and asking for help if their leg is broken or if they have a cut that's got infected, or if they're having chest pain, they go to the hospital. But with mental health, I think we tend to say here in East Texas, you know, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get over it and, you know, just keep moving forward. And that's really not the answer. And so when you delay getting care for that kind of stuff, then it winds up being a much more costly and invasive intervention. You wind up in the hospital, in the ER, or you might wind up in jail if you're not taking care of your mental health.
You segue nicely into a question I have. Just the societal cost of untreated mm-hmm. mental health. Address that for us.
Well, that's something that people don't think about a lot, but when you see the homeless numbers go up, a lot of times those may be people that are struggling with some mental health issues that have gone untreated. Also, we have overcrowding in our ERs, which delay care for people who are having true medical emergencies because of the mental health care that's going on in the ERs. Our jails, I think one in about 40% of the inmates, the last that I talked to them, had some sort of a mental health issue. So it's creating costs for our community through ER utilization and our jail population.
So tell me what specifically the Andrews Behavioral Health, what we used to call the Andrews Center, mm-hmm. what specifically do you do to address this problem?
So we're doing some really interesting projects with the county and having a lot of success at the jail by working with the DA's office, the judicial system and the jail to make sure we get people placed correctly as much as we can. So if someone comes in and we can find a more appropriate place for them and they're not a violent offender, we might work with the jail to make that happen. We're doing jail-based competency restoration so that we can get people restored to competency.
Describe that when you say restored to competency. What do you mean by that?
So if someone's arrested and they're deemed not competent to stand trial.
Okay.
So they go on a wait list for a state bed to be restored to competency. And okay. The average wait time for that is around 18 months to get in. So that's before they can even start on it and be tried for their offense. They have to wait and go in there. So jail-based competency restoration is a program where you have qualified professionals go into the jail and actually work with them to restore that competency and they can proceed with their trial, and it pulls them off that wait list. So every day in jail that we're saving the taxpayers money. And so if someone gets into the jail-based competency restoration program, they can usually get out within 2 to 3 months versus the 18 months that they're sitting there waiting to go to the state.
I think we all, by virtue of having seen movies and by just mm-hmm. by the culture, we have a vision of mental health from the early 20th century, and mm-hmm. you know, we had what we, you know, insane asylums. We just people that we couldn't get their behavior under control. We just kind of mm-hmm. warehoused them, and it's pretty ugly legacy. Mental health treatment has come a long way since those dark days. What can we do for the mentally ill today? People really struggling with mental health. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's so much things that you can do, and it's interesting because that is the concept that people have about mental illness, especially severe mental illness like schizophrenia. They feel like these people are not people that could function in society, but that's just not true. With proper care and medications and treatment, they can be very productive members of society. At our summit last year, our speaker that was there actually did suffer with mental illness. He's a brilliant person, was doing brilliantly in his career, and then had like a psychiatric break and then wound up actually being in jail. But he got the proper treatment. He's now like the head of one of the leaders of the Texas Judicial Commission on Mental Health and goes around and does workshops and stuff. So with the proper treatment, you wouldn't even know people had a mental illness. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And the thing is, where I'm going with this, you know, there has been improvement in treatment, particularly.
Oh, absolutely.
Medications, but also, just talk therapy has improved, has it not?
Yes, absolutely. So there's all kinds of things and advancements, and there continues to be every day new discoveries and new ideas and new ways of handling these things. So the more that we pay attention to it and we learn about it and we don't push it back and not talk about it, then we're going to advance just like we did with medical health care.
Is it fair to say that very nearly every family is affected directly or at the very minimum indirectly by someone in the circle that is suffering with a mental illness problem?
I believe so, because there's hardly anybody I talk to that doesn't either have a direct experience with either anxiety, depression, addiction of one sort or another. So either directly or a family member or an extended family member or a friend. I'm hard-pressed to find anybody who's been spared from that completely.
When we talk about behavioral health and mental health, does this include or is it separate? Because I did, for my purposes of my mm-hmm. education, does that encompass addiction issues, drug and alcohol?
Yes, it does.
And because that is, of course, those are both very common in the mm-hmm. culture. To what extent do you, let's just single out alcohol, mm-hmm. To what extent does the Andrews Behavioral Health, the Andrews Center, work with other known alcohol treatment therapies, you know, like Alcoholics Anonymous and 12-step mm-hmm. programs? How does that all fit together?
Those are really core tools that everybody that works in the addiction space utilize, the Alcoholics Anonymous, 12-step programs. So that is a tool and a resource that we all use. We do provide substance use, treatment for substance use disorders. We're getting into offering medication-assisted treatment, which will help people, beat their addiction with opioids. We've received some funding from the county, so we're going to be doing some of that treatment.
Is it fair to say that somebody that has a substance abuse problem, be it alcohol or drugs, is it fair to say that it is unfair to ask them, well, just stop? Because that's kind of the attitude of somebody who doesn't have the problem. Well, just quit. Just don't drink. Don't take the drugs. It's not that easy, is it?
No, it's not that easy. That tends to be what we say around here. And I probably bought into that my own self at some point in my life till I've seen experiences with people and understand that a lot of times there's more to it. There's co-occurring mental health issues and people may be trying to self-medicate for that. Or there's just genetically a predisposition that it affects people different. Like, when you or I might take a drink, it may affect us in a certain way, and somebody else, it completely creates that addiction cycle.
It's fair to say that alcoholism is a disease, is it not?
Yes.
Just so we don't expect people to cure themselves of cancer. We don't expect people to cure themselves of diabetes. They need help with those things. So then it extends that if you have an alcohol or substance abuse problem, you need help as well.
That's true. And I want to clarify that I'm not a clinician.
No, I understand that. So. But you do deal with getting people the help they need, including getting them access to clinicians.
Absolutely, yeah.
To help them deal with these problems. Well, this segues into something that is going on with respect to your organization. We're with Becky Mangum, of the CEO of Andrews Behavioral Health, here on In Focus. You have an event coming up. Tell us what it is.
We do. It's next Tuesday. It's our annual Behavioral Health Summit. This is our third one. So it's an event that's really for everyone in our community if you want to learn more about mental health and what resources might be available. And as we just talked about, that's really everyone in our community, whether it's in you personally, your direct family member, extended family member, friends, or if you own a business, this affects you more than you know. When your employees are struggling with mental health, they're using sick days. Pastors, church leaders, community leaders, this is an event for them to come out and learn so that they can be there and help others.
We've said before, mental illness has far-ranging effects, and you mentioned the workplace. Talk mm-hmm. about that.
Well, we recently did a community needs assessment, and I apologize. I should have probably brought that with me so I'd have some more concrete statistics to review. But it talks in that about the incidence of people calling into work and the number of days of work that they miss due to mental health issues. And I don't have the exact numbers, but it's fairly significant. So, it does affect employers as well in our economy.
The impact, there's a big issue in the news. We talk about it a lot, homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of mental illness on homelessness.
I think that's a huge impact, whether it's via the addiction that we talked about or a serious mental illness like schizophrenia may keep someone from being able to keep and maintain a job. And so they wind up in the homeless situation, which then sometimes leads to criminal trespass charges and winds up with judicial involvement. So it's just a cascade effect.
One of the other organizations that we have come join us here on In Focus deal with domestic abuse. To what extent does mental health problems lead to a cascade of domestic abuse?
Well, it absolutely can do that when people are not doing well and not being treated properly. That could escalate to family violence, just incidentally, from people not being well.
So the point being, there's a wide audience mm-hmm. of people that need to understand and better appreciate the scope of the mental health problem in East Texas and the scope of things that can be done to address it.
Absolutely.
So tell us about the specifics of the event, the East Texas Behavioral Healthcare Summit. Where, when?
Okay. It's next Tuesday, the 12th.
So you said this coming Tuesday.
This coming Tuesday, this 12th.
Okay.
At the Brookshire Center in Tyler.
Okay.
It will be from 10 to 2. From 10 to noon, there's going to be about 100 different resources there that are nonprofits or different vendors or things that offer mental health or behavioral health services in some way or another. And so it's a great time for the community or anybody that's interested to come out and meet these people and for those entities to meet each other and work and make connections. From 12 to 1, we'll have a community conversation with some different folks from the judicial system, the ISD system, the church leader. I'm trying to think of the various ones that we're having, but it's going to be kind of a roundtable discussion where we're talking about some collaborations that we have that are really making some significant gains in these areas.
One group that I think you would probably want to single out if we stop and think about it. Veterans.
That's correct. We will have a veteran there to talk about kind of some of the work that we're doing over at Camp V.
What are the things that, to the extent that they are, what are the things that are unique to veterans with respect to mental health?
I think you talked about the stigma a little bit, and sometimes with our veteran population, I think that might be a little bit of a concern, because when you're in the military, it's, you know, a very rigid and disciplined and be strong type of an environment. So it's hard, I think, for our veterans to get the help that they need and not try to handle it themselves.
Are there any particular issues that are idiosyncratic to veterans or more likely to be suffered by veterans?
Sure. Of course, we all are familiar with PTSD or post-traumatic stress syndrome. So many of the veterans suffer with that. That's pretty, very common.
How is it treated?
You know, again, I'm not clinical.
I understand, but you are expert.
I am, but primarily through therapy, different types of therapy modes.
So. And to what level of success can it be treated?
It can be treated very successfully if someone will come through and work with the counselor.
So, back to the subject of the East Texas Behavioral Healthcare Summit, and we're with Becky Mangum, CEO of Andrews Behavioral mm-hmm. Health. Who's the audience for this thing? Who do you want to attend?
I want anybody and everybody to attend. Again, I think that to solve this problem, we mentioned earlier that we have mental health professionals in Smith County, but we have still a challenge to get access to care. So it's going to take everybody in our community paying attention to this problem to try to figure out what we can do. And so that's the highlight is connections. And I want people to come, whether they're experiencing it and getting need to get connected to resources or community leaders who can get connected to groups that are doing the good work in the space. And so we can all just figure out ways that we can work together to address the problem in unique ways.
What will people gain from 4 hours spent on Tuesday? What will they gain from attending the East Texas Behavioral Healthcare Summit?
They will gain, and of course you don't have to be there for the whole 4 hours, because the vendor resource thing is a kind of, if you want to come and pick up information, but they will gain a tremendous knowledge of what is actually available in our community. Like, it's very surprising. There's a lot of stuff that is available, and people don't really know that it's there. What I found really interesting after our first year is that a lot of the nonprofits or people that are working in the space don't even know sometimes about the other folks and the services that are available. So for the people who are professionals in the area, it will provide them a greater depth of resources to be able to help people. For employers, it would be education and resources when you need that for your employees, family members, people who are suffering. It could help them navigate this system of care with all these people here at one spot and finding out what's available.
Let's talk about something that probably might get overlooked from a behavioral health standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
We're all getting older.
Yes.
And when we're not only getting older, people we love are getting older. They're our mm-hmm. what I call our tribe elders. Mm-hmm. What does that introduce into the mental health and behavioral health picture?
That's kind of some unique challenges when you start talking about geriatric behavioral health, because sometimes you're trying to decide, you know, is it a behavioral health issue that needs treatment with behavioral health medications? Is it Alzheimer's, dementia? Just kind of what you're dealing with, finding people who are trained to work with geriatric populations in particular is sometimes challenging. And just getting them the right care, I think, is important, and the challenge, trying to figure out what it is.
We here in East Texas are fortunate that we have had, you know, relatively recently, we've opened a school of medicine, the UT Tyler mm-hmm. School of Medicine, which is, a big development for an area like this, and, I think going to prove to be a huge boon to this community. How are Andrews and the UT Tyler School of Medicine hoping to work together or working together now?
Mm-hmm. We've been actually working with UT, and they've had, of course, the residency program for a while. And they rotate residents through the Andrews Center, which is a wonderful opportunity for the residents to learn about community mental health. It's also wonderful for us because it gives extra access to physicians, to people who need that space. So we've already been working together. We also work with the UT system on placing people who are getting degrees in psychology and intern programs. But I'm really excited about the School of Medicine because their goal is to keep people, train people and keep people here in East Texas. And they're focusing on psychiatrists, which is a huge need. So there's just so many ways we already work together, and we're hoping on this project to work together just to increase awareness and education and ideas.
Very good. Becky Mangum is our guest. She's the CEO of Andrews Behavioral Health. Let me ask you a question. This may seem like a dumb question. If it is, it wouldn't be the first one I've asked, and it certainly won't be the last. Is there a distinction between mental health and behavioral health? Is there any, or are they interchangeable terms?
They're really kind of interchangeable terms.
One means the other. And the thing that I keep coming back to, Becky, and I think it's important for people to understand, and I really want to...
Let me clarify.
Okay.
So behavioral health is really kind of a little bit more of an umbrella that could include some other things besides mental health.
Okay.
So IDD individuals could fall under that behavioral health umbrella.
What is IDD?
Intellectual delays and disabilities.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I understand that. Okay. So just in the few minutes that we have left here in the program today, I want to go back mm-hmm. to what we kind of started the program with. And the fact is, I think a lot of people just don't address behavioral health issues because they just don't want the social stigma attached mm-hmm. to it. Family members don't want to have a family member associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, am I overstating that the stigma issue is a big issue?
I wish that you were. And I'd like to think we've made grounds in that area, and we have, but not to the degree that we kind of, not here in East Texas anyway. We haven't made grounds. We haven't made as much ground. It's still a stigma.
And so the stigma, the fact that it is a stigmatized concern, and almost no other health problem is stigmatized, but this is, that really gets in the way of dealing with it constructively, correct?
That is so true. And I wish people would realize that it is the same as a medical issue. If you had a medical issue, you would go get help immediately. You know, if your bone was broken, you'd go, or one of those things. But with mental health, we delay. And if you delayed with cancer, does it make it better or worse? Makes it worse.
Well, with respect to any health problem, delay is the time is the enemy. Mm-hmm. With respect to any health problem. Absolutely. And let's talk about that. To what extent is time the enemy with behavioral issues?
Oh, it's really, that's one thing. One new project that I'm really wanting to focus on is trying to get people involved at an earlier level, like lay people, because the earlier you intervene in a mental health situation, it's less costly, it's less invasive to the person, and you have a better outcome. So if we see issues early and we get involved and help, that can oftentimes be resolved just by some talking with a counselor, or just talking even with a friend sometime, or a community mental health worker. It doesn't get to the point that you're needing a psychiatrist, or that you wind up in jail, or that you commit suicide or make a suicide attempt. So I'm looking at working with faith communities, because many people go there first when they start struggling with a mental illness. And you know, personally, in my church, if somebody came, people would want to help, but they might not know how, or they might not recognize the signs, or they might not know resources or feel comfortable sending people or telling people about things. So my goal this next year is to really try to work with faith communities and maybe do some mental health first aid training, kind of like we do first aid training for other things, or CPR training.
If you could wave a wand, what is maybe the one thing you wish people knew about Andrew's behavioral health? What do you want the community to know about you?
We're here and we're caring for a lot of people in your community. I think the community doesn't notice that Andrew Center is here and what we're doing, but if we weren't here, you sure would notice.
Well, that's a fair thing to say. So you're without a behavioral health, without a mental health mechanism authority, it would become apparent very quickly.
It sure would.
Okay, so in the time we have left, we got about 2 minutes left. Just for people that are joining us late, Becky Mangum, CEO of Andrews Behavioral Health, give us just again the rundown on the East Texas Behavioral Healthcare Summit.
Okay, it's this coming Tuesday the 12th from 10 to 2 at the Brookshire Center. There's a resource fair from 10 to 12. There's over 100 vendors scheduled to be there that will have all kinds of resources available for people struggling. There'll be a community conversation from 12 to 1, and then the resource tables will still be around till 2 for people to grab more. Oh, and I forgot to mention we have food trucks there, so if you want to come grab some food and listen in on your lunch break, that's a chance to do that too.
We haven't brought this up. What's the cost to attend?
There is no cost to attend. We want to promote this, so we do it for free. We don't charge the vendors for being there. It's just a community event.
Do I need to do anything before I go? Is there anything required of me in order to attend the event?
There is not. We do have an Eventbrite event. So if you wanted to sign up just for planning purposes, for seating and stuff like that, that'd be great. But you don't even have to do that.
But just it would help on. You. It would help you if people did.
It would.
So where does one go to do that?
Oh, my goodness, Paul. I'm so sorry. There's a link on andrewscenter.com.
Well, that's the easiest way to find it.
Andrewscenter.com. Or we have a Facebook page that also has the event on there with a link to the event.
And your Facebook page is found the same way, Andrew's Behavioral Health?
It's andrewscenter.com.
Andrew Center is how you're found on Facebook. Mm-hmm. We got about 30 seconds left. How do people find, I think we just brought it up, how do people find you online? AndrewsCenter.com?
AndrewsCenter.com.
And what will they find there if you go to AndrewsCenter.com?
They'll find out the different kinds of services that we offer. There's resources there, and I would encourage people to go take a look, even if you're not experiencing a mental health issue now. I think you'd be surprised to see what all we do there at the center.
Becky Mangum, CEO, Andrews Behavioral Health here on In Focus. Thank you so much for your time, Becky.
Thank you for having me.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and The Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.